Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Dr. Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria, California, and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage. Somewhere in American media, Trump is being called a racist as I speak. Probably 100. No, I'm sure that's an exaggeration. It's probably more like 400 times a day. Is President Donald Trump a racist? Was he ever a racist? What is the basis for this charge? What is the case supporting it? And while we're at it, what exactly is racism and a racist? And you are in for a big surprise. The left claims that at the core of their hatred for Trump is their belief that he is a racist. So hate racism, hate Trump. It's just about like that. In this show, I intend to explore that charge thoroughly and, of course, honestly. My friends, it is time for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic. A gourmet meal for the mind.
Racist. Racism. Where does the word come from? A popular meme alleging Trotsky coined the term in the 30s in his memoirs, and that he used it to discredit all who opposed communism. Has been circulating for quite a while now. Trotsky's memoirs, published in 1930, under the title Leon Trotsky, My Life, contains only one paragraph in chapter 30, where he speaks of racism in any way meaningful to our concern with the word. Earlier in the book, in chapter 16, he speaks of the Russian races. In chapter 21, he speaks of the Latin race, but it's in chapter 30, the chapter titled In Moscow, that you find any use of the term in connection with what he called the whites. The whites, however, were not white people, merely. The army that fought in favor of monarchy for governance and capitalism for the economy, for economics, well, they were called the White Army. Trotsky was a general in charge of the Red Army under Lenin. In this paragraph, he speaks of talking with Lenin about his role in the aftermath of the revolution and bringing up the, quote, question of race, end quote, after admitting that Lenin was right, that the issue of race was irrelevant at that time. He noted that, however, those of the defeated White Army hated Trotsky, and they made his Jewish ancestry an issue. He tells of a supporter who was accosted by one of the White Guard writers who chided him for fighting under the command of a Jew. The Trotsky admirer, quote, retorted with warm conviction, "Nothing of the sort. Trotsky is not a Jew. Trotsky is a fighter. He's ours. Russian. It's Lenin who is a communist, a Jew, but Trotsky is ours, a fighter, Russian, our own," quote unquote. Anyway, this meme originated with some white supremacist organization who picked up from that the idea that Trotsky used the word racist in his effort to denigrate those who disagreed with him politically. So Trotsky did not invent the word. Neither did Darwin, by the way, who used the word before Trotsky. Quote, "The Western nations of Europe now so immeasurably surpass their former savage progenitors that they stand at the summit of civilization. The civilized races of man will almost certainly exterminate and replace the savage races through the world," end quote. Okay. Indeed, the original title of Darwin's famous or infamous book was, ready? On the Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection, or The Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life. Darwin, by the way, abhorred slavery, but he did believe that as far as evolution was concerned, the blacks were inferior. That's Darwinism for you. Darwin, therefore, was a racist, wasn't he? I'm getting ahead of myself here, but here's a thought. All Western civilization, certainly in the scientific communities around the world, have built their edifice upon the theory of the teachings of a racist. Yeah, all science is premised upon the teachings of a racist today. Think about that, including global warming. But anyway, a man who believed the white race was superior to all others, and so by extension, all science today is racist, right? But Darwin did not invent the word. And that's my point at present. The root of the word race runs on into a French word that was taken from a Latin word, raza. You've heard of la raza. Raza, which has the same meaning, and it specifically, technically means breed or lineage. In 1854, the word racial appeared, and it was used to describe differences in groups of people identified by common physical traits. This is how the word came to be used in Darwin's writings in 1859. He was very hip, you know. The French were using the word in their agitations for social change back in the late 1800s and early 1900s. The theory that racial causes, that's breeding and lineage, might account for cultural and character as well as physical differences began to emerge. In fact, by the time Darwin published, race had come to be argued to be a contributor, even of religious differences from one culture to another. In Blackwood's Edinburgh magazine, an article appeared that suggested racial diversities were in some measure responsible for differences in religious expressions, or that they were in some way connected. In California, in 1874, the Philadelphia Inquirer published an article that claimed Californians were guilty of racial prejudices and that the Chinese bore this quietly. Essentially, up to the mid-1900s, the word was understood as a classification of human beings based on physical characteristics. But, as you can see, it began to be used more broadly to speak of social and even cultural differences also. By the time we get to Darwin and then to Hitler, the word had come to its maturity in its meaning. Trotsky nailed it in his treatise titled What is National Socialism? And he's referring to Hitler's brand. He published that in 1933. He said, quote, on the plane of politics, racism is a vapid and bombastic variety of chauvinism in alliance with phrenology, end quote. That's actually quite clever. Chauvinism, understood in Trotsky's day, was exaggerated or aggressive patriotism, and phrenology was the study of the shape and size of the skull as a way to predict the character and mental capacity of someone. It's obvious that even Lenin's whip, Trotsky, saw the truth about racism early on. A vapid and bombastic variety of assumed superiority based on physical attributes that identify you with a certain group. Yeah, I hope you heard that. Yeah, like black supremacy or white supremacy or la raza. You get the point. This is the sort of thinking that leads to slavery, to genocide, to Auschwitz, to Dachau. But how do we get from race, categories of human beings based on physical attributes, to racial, character, cultural distinctions, and so forth, influenced by racial origins, to racism, the pretense that one race is superior to another based on things like, well, phrenology, for example, to racist, as we use it today? Interestingly, the word racist first appears in 1924 in the Portland Oregonian, editorializing on the elections then going on in Germany and expressing the opinion that elections show the Germans at the moment, and expressing the opinion that, quote, elections show the Germans at the moment want neither racists nor communists, hyphen, that is, neither extreme nationalists nor extreme revolutionists, end quote. They got it partly right. Hitler was no communist, but he was certainly a racist and a socialist to boot. And those things always go together. What is interesting about the editorial in the Oregonian is that here is the first use of the word racist, and it includes a definition, extreme nationalist. The writer of the article, or the editorial, evidently saw racist as a synonym for extreme nationalist. Now, not nationalism, okay, which would be a loyalty and preferential deference to one's own nation, but extreme nationalism, which is militaristic in nature and exceedingly obnoxious to human rights. And so, apparently, the Oregonian editor presumed race was a national identification, and that was pretty widespread at that time. And a racist was one who had an extreme sense of superiority over other races. That is a pretty odd way for an American to think of race. However, understand that this is only another stepping stone taking us to its use and meaning today. The bottom line is that racist was identified with a belief in racial superiority connected with an aggressive mission to dominate or subjugate inferior ones. Now, this is the belief that Democrats use to justify slavery. This is what, in the minds of the jihadis, justifies 9/11 and every other terrorist act. Racist mentality justifies beheading Christians, crucifying them in front of their children while telling the children to convert, or warning them that they had better, because when they don't, they're beheaded. Now, granted, these are barbaric forms of racist sentiment. Since the Civil War in America, the racist sentiment has morphed significantly. But the essence of racism remains the same. The prejudicial belief that one race is superior to another, or the belief that this or that race is inferior. The barbaric version enslaves by force and compulsion. But the new racist in America, feeling very guilty about how they treated slaves, now looks at them as pitiful inferiors who need their protection and provision. Well, let's summarize the actual meaning of these words, and then I'll come back in segment two, and we'll begin addressing the specific question, is Trump a racist? A racist is someone who believes he is superior to others based on racial characteristics. He or she believes certain races of people are inferior, and depending on sentimentality, they will see themselves as gracious superiors reaching down to the pitiful inferiors to feed them, you know, like they were their pets and promise them their Obama phone and so on. It is what contrasts conservatives and liberals today at a very, very fundamental level. And it wasn't always that way, but this has developed to the place where progressives view so-called minorities as needing them, as unable to do for themselves, as incapable of rising up from under their imagined oppression from the white man. Well, I'm here to tell you that this white man respects the dignity of every man. And when I heard Martin Luther King say, when I was a child, that he dreamed of a day a man would be judged by the content of his character and not by the color of his skin, I mean, friend, I'll never forget that moment. That statement just sunk deep into my soul. The righteousness of it settled down and became part of the foundation of my thinking. A racist thinks he should be judged by the color of his skin and not by the content of his character. The same thing becomes clear when you view the differences in the way conservatives handle the issue of poverty. For example, we don't see impoverished people as pitiful or incapable. We see them as people who have the same responsibilities as everyone else. And we're always glad to help, but we're never glad to take over their responsibilities. All right? And these things are connected. We'll get into it some more when I get back. Hold on to the break. Folks, remember, if you want to grow, and I mean really grow in your knowledge of the Word of God, you cannot find a better place than right here at Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria. Sunday morning at 9:30, I'm offering a comprehensive study of prophecy, and I mean comprehensive. Every prophetic passage in the Bible will be laid out for you, and you'll have a totally biblical knowledge of these subjects, so these yahoos can't jerk you around with their phony predictions anymore.
Call 805-714-7731. Stand by. Five, the Brain four, Massage Show three, is about to blow your mind.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Dr. Jerry Scheinbach, pastor of the Lighthouse Baptist Church, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. Okay, we've hammered out a clear definition, a real definition, of the word racist. Now, of course, the way the liberals use it today, it's anyone who disagrees with their politics. And the rationale is that their politics are nice and help the pitiful people who cannot help themselves. And so anyone opposed to them is mean and does not want pitiful people to be helped. And so they brand them as racist. You see, they're misusing the word. But most of the people who oppose their politics do so in major part because of the great damage their policies are bringing to those they say they're trying to help. We look at each person as an individual and expect them to take responsibility for themselves and for their families, to use their God-given talents and intelligence, to take advantage of the amazing opportunities afforded to us in this country, and take the initiative to make their own contribution to their success, and based on their character, offer whatever assistance might be necessary to help them along. In this country, there is always a place for someone willing to get smart and work hard. Now, we don't view people as pets that we, as a nation, are obliged to keep. We believe in the dignity of every man, woman, and child created in the image and likeness of God. And we believe that includes every man, woman, and child on this planet. We did the work of running down a proper, true definition of the word racist. To summarize, a racist is anyone who views themselves as superior to another based on the color of their skin. If Michael Jordan thinks of himself as a better basketball player than me, that's not being racist. That's being a realist. If he thinks his superiority over me as a basketball player is because he's black and my inferiority in that regard is because I'm white, well, that's getting closer to racism. But in all honesty, friend, that's really not racist. That can just be a generalized observation. If he thinks his superiority as a black athlete makes him superior over me as a white man, well, then that's what a racist does. Anyway, the racists in America today are those who think in terms of skin color, who are constantly talking about race, and who use the charge of racist against people who don't even think in terms of race. I mean, we might judge people on the basis of their character. That's what Martin Luther asked us to do. But today, if that judgment falls against someone who happens to be of another color, it's immediately viewed as racist, when race has nothing to do with discernment or judgment. Okay, let's look at the charge that Trump is a racist. And I think we should begin with his current record. Isn't it what a man does or is doing that serves as the best place to start with making a judgment about his character? You know, not that past abuses should be ignored, but I think we should start with the record immediately in front of us. Believe me, when I say none of them have anything to do with me finding in my studies and research, which has been extensive, that Trump used to be a racist, but now he's not. No, that's not true. I've gone over every proof the liberals have put out there, and I can tell you right now, Trump is not a racist, but he is a realist, and he's honest. He's not afraid to make judgments based on character without regard to concerns someone might call him a racist. As an aside, by the way, I Googled, quote, Trump's record in helping blacks and Hispanics, end quote. The first hit at the top of the list was this: what Trump has not done for African Americans and Hispanics. Yeah, Washington Post, by the way. So coming into this election, don't think for one moment Google and all the rest of them are not going to try to influence the election. And of course they will. And you keep that in mind. Quote, this year, African American unemployment fell to a record low of 5.9%. Total African American employment has increased by 976,000 since President Trump's election and stands at a record high. The poverty rate for African Americans reached its lowest level on record in 2017, end quote. Now, all of this is based on stuff, documents I have in my notes here for you. Now, liberals have a special math they apply when calculating unemployment during Obama. It does not take into account those that dropped out of the job market. Look, there is a reason that so many today are just rejoicing over the Trump economy. And you did not hear that under the Obama economy. Why have Obama's fans suddenly come up with this? It all started with Obama. But the blacks and the Hispanics, they never came out shouting Obama's praises about what he's doing for them in the economy. And that is because the fact is the economy was depressed under Obama and it is ecstatic under Trump. African-American employment increased by 976,000 jobs since Trump's election. If that had happened at any time during Obama's administration, you would have never heard the end of it. It would have been wall-to-wall coverage and horn-blowing. So when you go online and you see all these Harvard libs, you know, with their charts trying to prove Obama is the one that got all this started, remember that while figures don't lie, liars figure. The fact is the Trump economy is even better than it appears in the numbers. And that's because in this economy, you have hundreds of thousands of people re-entering the job market who under Obama just gave up. So you've got hundreds of thousands of people re-entering the job market, which theoretically you would expect might result in a net increase in the jobless rate because they're having to start looking for jobs. They don't have one yet. You got more people looking for jobs, which could drive the unemployment numbers up. But here you have, in fact, the unemployment numbers going down. Now, that means that there are a lot of jobs opening up in this economy, and that is what's happening, and that's why people are ecstatic. Another important number to look at is the welfare roll. Since Trump has taken office, nearly 3 million, or actually a little more, I think it's 3.5 million, have stopped taking food stamps. I believe Reagan was right when he said, we should measure welfare's success by how many leave welfare. Well, you know, it doubled under Obama, the number on welfare. It dropped a little and then leveled off in 2014 and 2015. But since Trump has been elected, it dropped precipitously. 3.6 million since Trump was elected president. So you have to watch the hand of these shell game players, you know, manipulating the numbers and trying to protect the legacy of the worst president in America's history to save the party, the Democrat Party. But Americans are experiencing the Trump economy and Americans are loving it. Now, look, I'm going to throw a bunch of numbers out there. I know for some of you, that's just going to cause your eyes to glaze over, but be patient with me. I need to lay it out. During the Obama years, median family income for Black Americans declined 10.9%. From June 2007 to August 2012, the Black workforce decreased 58.6 to 52.8. The Black labor force participation rate, which rose throughout the 80s and 90s, declined sharply under Obama. Now it stands at 61.4%. Black home ownership fell from 46.1% in 2009 down to 43.3% in 2014. And I know these numbers, that sound like a large drop, but we're talking about the numbers we're dealing with, this means millions of people, okay? The percentage of Black Americans living in poverty expanded from 25.8 to 27.2. More Black Americans living in poverty, fewer Black Americans owning homes. You understand what I'm saying here? Now, here's the thing. Those kinds of figures, you can't play with them. It's hard to play with the number of people who are owning homes. Trump was not trying to help any specific demographic here, except one. The demographic of America. And he has proved what I've known all along. You work to help everybody, everybody wins. You try to focus on only a segment of the economy and take from one group to try to help them, everybody loses. Every time. He has shown that despite all the efforts of the modern hate America Democrats to bring this nation down, this is still a great country. MAGA. MAGA all the way. Now, as to the specific charges, let's look at them. I've got three documents I'm going to draw from. One is prepared by USA Today writer Crystal Hayes in an article titled, quote, "Here are 10 times President Trump's statements have been called racist," end quote, August 14, 2018. Here's another that was prepared by uber-liberal Dana Milbank of the Washington Post, December 1, 2015, and his article is titled, quote, "Donald Trump is a bigot and a racist," end quote. Okay. Then there is, quote, "Donald Trump's racism, the definitive list," end quote. And that by New York Times, David Leonhardt and Ian Prasad Philbrick, January 15, 2018. I'm going to be mixing these together because they overlap quite a bit. And we're going to use the definitive list as the outline. All right. First, the New York years, end quote. Now, this one is a favorite. Trump was accused of discrimination in his rental policies in New York in 1970. Yeah, this goes back to the Nixon years, but it's also one that gets little notice, even though it's a favorite within their circles. Why? Because he was never convicted. He denied the charges. He never even paid a fine. To settle with New York, he agreed to post a letter simply stating his policy clearly and then posting that policy statement at his rental offices or something like that. Some Blacks wanted to rent his apartments and he refused to do it because his office followed his criteria for qualifying applicants and they didn't meet that criteria. I mean, they had to have the ability to pay. And they had to be people they had no reason to be afraid would trash the house. Simple as that. So they found a few people who were denied their application and file a complaint, and they did. And then they attempted to charge him, but they had no evidence to support it. They couldn't prove it. Why would New York come after him? Well, they wanted him to rent to Section 8 recipients, and he did not want to get into that market. It's as simple as that. Now, you can call that racist if you want to, and you would call that racist if you are one. You see, because you believe he actually should make decisions about renting according to skin color, but he chose not to. So, next, quote, "Trump treated Black employees at his casinos differently from whites, according to multiple sources," end quote. Folks, these multiple sources are all hearsay, and all we have is the word of a disgruntled employee and then Trump's rebuttal and denial. All right, we don't have a situation where we have witnesses to corroborate these stories. One anecdote is that when Trump would visit his casinos, the Blacks were ushered out and hid in the back room. Okay. Like Trump didn't know he had Black people working for him in the casinos? When we know for a fact he knew he had Black people working for him in hundreds of other jobs? This is just strange. Supposedly he said, quote, "Black guy's counting my money. I hate it. I think that guy is lazy. And it's probably not his fault because laziness is a trait in Blacks," end quote. Wow. That sounds pretty racist. Almost as racist as some of the things I've heard tell Hillary has said. Yeah. And the things that Bill has said that I've heard, or that LBJ said, yeah. Or how about as racist as Obama's comment about Bible and gun clingers? Shame on Trump if he said this, okay? But he denies it, and no one has offered corroborating testimony to prove that he said it. No one stepped forward to corroborate it. So it becomes fodder for the Trump haters, but as you've noticed, it just doesn't stick. Why? Because there isn't an overwhelming number of these kinds of things running around out there. Listen, if he was that kind of person who talked like that, there'd be stories like this all over the place. Third, Trump took out an ad in New York newspapers quote, urging the death penalty for five black and Latino teenagers accused of raping a white woman in Central Park, end quote. Now, Trump was really worked up over this case. All of the evidence that was being presented publicly indicated their guilt. If you read the ad, however, there is not a single race statement anywhere in it. For example, quote, many New York families, white, black, Hispanic, and Asian, have had to give up the pleasure of a leisurely stroll in the park at dusk, end quote. His rant was, quote, what has happened for the respect for authority, for fear of retribution by the court, society, and the police, for those who break the law, who wantonly trespass on the right of others, end quote. And so forth. You ought to read the whole thing. I can't do it here on the show. But there's not one racist sentiment expressed in the ad. The only thing is, it just happens to be the case that this case that he was worked up about involved blacks and Latinos. That's it. You see, if you're angry about a crime committed in your community, you don't dare express your concern if it involves one of the liberal protected races. Yeah, I understand these kids were exonerated in the court because of some DNA testing and evidence, and that Trump continued to believe they were guilty. He had some doubts about the whole thing. But as you see, this is what I love about Trump. It's as if the guy's got race blinders on or something. He doesn't care about being called a racist. He just looks at what's in front of him, and he makes a judgment call based on what he sees. It's as simple as that. He believed the preponderance of evidence that said they did it, and he doubted whether the DNA evidence had been rigged. What can I say? Okay, that might be a lot of things. And he was, in my opinion, probably wrong. But I don't know. You know, my point, however, is that isn't racist. The idea that it is racist is a suspicion based on something somebody wants to believe. All right, next. Quote, an obsession with dark-skinned immigrants, end quote. Really? These New York Times writers tell us this began in his 2016 presidential campaign. They write that Trump was, quote, disparaging immigrants as criminals and rapists, end quote. These people have something broken in their brain that does not allow, for example, the word illegal to appear anywhere in their thoughts. It's something I most despise about these sorts of liberals. Do you understand that it is a flat-out lie to say Trump was disparaging Mexican immigrants as criminals and rapists without qualifying and giving the context there? It's a wicked and evil thing to make such efforts to destroy a man's character in this way. I mean, I might as well say David Linhart and Ian Prasad Philbrick are disparaging all whites in America with their comments about Donald Trump, which would be nonsense. Although, Trump has taught, they think we all are racist because we voted for him. That's what's going on here. This is just insane. Trump is talking about those who illegally cross our borders, friend A. And then B, in the context of that statement, he was talking about MS-13 gang members. Uh-huh. That's right. In context of his speech, he was talking about the fact that MS-13 gang members cross our borders with other illegals and commit these horrendous crimes, so we need to stop the flow. Well, first, they're not even immigrants. They're criminals crossing our border illegally. Oh, for heaven's sake. You know, because Trump wants to protect Americans, he called for a complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States for a time, including Muslim American citizens who were outside the country. And so, because of that, he's a racist. What? So, what was FDR when he ordered the internment of Japanese American citizens during World War II? I'm not sure I like that policy either, but you see, it's not about racism. It's not racist. These are policies that we should debate and discuss, but to assume they make Trump a racist is absurd. And it just serves to kill any effort to have a conversation. Can't let you in right now. We've got to make sure you're not going to blow us up. And that's Trump. You know what? I'm going to have to make this a two-parter. Just ran out of time here. So next time, we're going to pick it up from here. And listen, we're not going to leave one of these so-called proofs unanswered. I've lit the lamps in the church belfry arch. Now you let me know you see they're on. You can call in 805-314-2114 and say lights on or lights off and then hang up. If you want me to call you back, let me know. Or you can go to our website, brainmassage.net, and send me an email. God bless you. God bless America. And I'll see you in church.